Menards Black Friday sale is here. Get everything you need to bring home the holidays. A Nerf Blaster dog toy blasts tennis balls 75 feet. Fun for you and your pup. Just $15.99. Delicious Dubai chocolate is $12.99 a bag. Color-changing squish lamps and Performax drill bit sets are only $4.99 each. Menards has great Black Friday gifts for everyone in your family. Hurry in while supplies last. Good through November 30th. See Menards.com for details.
Have you ever felt stuck in a career that no longer fits who you are? Welcome to Discovering Journeys, and I'm your host, Sujala. In today's episode, we are joined by Dr. Rachel Beanland, a public health medicine specialist who walked away from the hospital wards not because she stopped caring, but because she started listening to the burnout, the overwhelm, that inner voice whispering that there had to be more. Now, a physician coach, a mindfulness teacher, Rachel helps doctors reimagine their careers without sacrificing their well-being and their sense of purpose. Today, she shares how she navigated the fear, the doubt, the pressure to stay, and how she discovered the freedom to create a life that fits. If you have ever felt worn out because of your career, this conversation is for you. Let's start. Hello, Rachel. Welcome to my podcast.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
You started your career in hospital medicine for 8 years, and then you transformed to create a much more meaningful and impactful career. What triggered this change and why?
Oh, that's a great question to start with. I will do my best to answer it as easily as I can. But I think, like a lot of people, I went into studying medicine because I had an urge to help people. I wanted to make the world a better place. You know, I had a lot of really honorable intentions, but I also was really fascinated by the human body and medicine in itself. But I think I had very little idea of what it would look like actually working as a doctor. But one thing that really was quite impactful for me was in my studies at university, I spent some time in South Africa. And that was at a time where the HIV epidemic had really hit a really high peak. And there wasn't really treatment available, particularly in South Africa at that time. So it was a really valuable experience for me, I think, to see a different health system, to understand that health is not the same across the globe, to understand that access to healthcare is not the same. And I think these things started to create a sort of interest in me about how I could maybe use my skills that I was learning in medicine and in med school in a better way, in a different way, to maybe impact more broadly, kind of outside of the health system that I was in. I was in the UK at the time. So that was kind of going on in the back of my mind. And when I graduated and started working in clinical medicine, I was working in hospital medicine. And, you know, there were so many bits of it that I really enjoyed, so many aspects. You know, it's a huge privilege to have that skill, to be able to support people in their journey of sickness, to, you know, support families. But I think that there was something that I was always really struggling with, and I couldn't really see where my next steps were. I couldn't really see the people I wanted to become. Like, I couldn't see those role models. And I knew that I wanted to kind of make a bigger impact somehow, like think about how to help people become more healthy rather than treat people who were already unwell. And so that was really the start of me trying to find something different. And I think that was a big part of my change to go from clinical medicine into public health. And public health, for anyone who's listening, is really thinking about prevention of disease. It's really thinking about increasing people's well-being, trying to make the whole population healthier. And that can be done in so many different ways. But a lot of it is moving away from that individual point of care, like the one-to-one relationship that you have with a doctor, and looking at it in a much broader aspect of thinking, how can we improve people's health more broadly? But I think the second thing that was really important to me that probably pushed me and maybe weighed about 50-50 was that I started to realize that I wasn't very suited to the environment I was working in. Like, it was a really busy environment. I could kind of deal with it quite well. You know, I was actually very good at being able to deal with the stress. But what it did was I had really bad boundaries. I was unable to say no. I often took on more work because, you know, there were people absent or sick. And I really wasn't able to look after my own health or wellness. So I had a very chaotic life. I was doing a lot of shifts, a lot of night shift, a lot of weekends. I really wasn't able to think about my own emotional health or physical health. And I think there was never really a point where I reached, you know, burnout or really that really extreme moment of stress. But I think it would have continued to impact me quite negatively had I not made a change. And I think there was a bit of me that realized, I'm not sure I want to live this life, or maybe the other side of it is I want other things in my life. I want to make space for my own health and wellness as well. So it was a combination of those two things that really kind of made me think about taking a different turn in my career at that point.
Especially doctor professionals, you guys put a lot of time in training, in studying, and even while you have to have a practical, you know, like an internship or something, it is really hectic, fast paced, and it's like the shifts are erratic. It's not easy to step away from it. Did you feel heavy about making this transition to change?
Definitely. I think that word is very good to describe that feeling, because like you said, you know, I'd spent 5 years at university studying. I'd then gone straight into working, but you have a preclinical year where you're getting your final certification, and then you're straight into exams to certify for the next stages and the next specializations. So it's difficult to step away for several reasons. I think one is the fear that you've invested an enormous amount of time and energy to get to that point. The other one is the difficulty of stepping into something that is maybe less common for people around you to do. So most people that I graduated with either stayed in hospital medicine, became GPs, are surgeons. You know, they have a very defined field that they've gone into, and public health is a less known pathway. So it feels, I think a lot, and I find this with a lot of my coaching clients, is that you can feel very stuck because you feel like there's no alternative, and you feel like everything you've done up to that point is only contributing to that point, and you can't see how it would contribute to anything else. And also everyone around you is kind of doing the same. So to step outside, like, I think inherently we as humans, we all want to be this, you know, part of the gang. We all want to be part of the club, right? We want to feel like we have commonalities with each other. And I think that's difficult to step away.
Yeah. And also, I feel you brought a very good point of the belongingness and a comfort zone is what, when you explained it, came to my mind. It's not easy to, when you have put in the effort and you feel at the core that you belong here, and to deviate from it, it could be for good reasons. Nobody is doubting that. But there is a sense of comfort zone, and there is a sense of mind shift that needs to happen to take that bold transition. At what point did you say, this is it? I am changing.
Yeah, so I think that's hard to pinpoint, because for me, I did do a bit of a transition, and I like that word because for me, transition is kind of slower than that sort of one day and the next day being so defined. I did hold on to some clinical work for a bit of time as I kind of dipped my toe into the world of research, into the world of public health, because I felt like, what if I let go completely? Am I not going to be able to go back? And I think that's quite a common fear of like the what if. But I think the mindset shift that really helped me was to get more comfortable with that sense of uncertainty, to realize that actually we think we have things that are certain in our lives, but actually very few things are certain. Like if we think about it, probably, you know, the beginning and end of life is very certain. We all know that those two things happen, but everything else in the middle is a concept. It's like a thought that something is certain. And so often the fear comes because, and this is definitely where my fear was coming from as well, was that it felt uncertain. I didn't know. Like I had a lot of questions, like, am I going to enjoy doing something else? Will I get bored? What will happen if I don't like it after 3-4 years? Can I return back? How will that happen? What will I earn? You know, these are common questions that we have when we start to think about changing careers and jobs. And I think what helped me was to realize that I wasn't going to have all those answers. And if I waited to have those answers, I would be waiting forever. And it felt like, on balance, at that point, you have to kind of take a leap of faith, I guess, but to also become comfortable with the fact that you don't have those answers, but also become comfortable with the fact that if you stay where you are, you also don't have the answers to how that's going to turn out either. And so I think for me, that was the process that I went through. And it was a transition. It was very much probably over a period of about 18 months where I sort of disentangled myself, I would say, from the world I was in and put my feet, you know, more firmly into my new direction. And I think that that's what I see a lot with my clients that I work with as well, is that actually it's more common to take that sort of gentle transition. It gives you time to do that mindset work, to really get yourself in the right position to feel confident about the steps you're taking.
Yeah, because I myself changed my trajectory as well. So it was like I am a techie. So I was like into the product management and quality management, so that I embraced uncertainty, and it irked me at the beginning for sure. And it was very turmoil in me. It's like, what's happening? What's happening? What's happening? But then once you kind of embrace that uncertainty and try to look beyond, I think you start to find answers. And that's how I have like many mini projects in my mind. So the what if still bothers me, and there is a sense of doubt as well. It is not easy to, because even now when you say what you used to do, it's a huge part of your life you have invested in. And to say that you have changed, and society also doesn't kind of give you any sort of encouragement. Excuse me. So you're doing it because you have nothing else to do. That's the question. So how did your environment or the society, did it affect you, or you could just easily shut the noise?
That is a fantastic question, because I think that the expectation that we have kind of external expectations, which is of what other people might think about us. And then we have a lot of internal expectation too. And they're often really jumbled up with each other. So we might have taken some of those external expectations and created a lot of internal expectations related to them. I think for me, I don't think I encountered a lot of negativity from my decisions, but I think what helped me was that I was very careful about the conversations I had with people. I was very careful about the people I chose to find my like champions, those people who are going to support the change, who could support my next steps without bringing too much negativity in, and kind of seeking out the support when I needed it. Because we can end up having a lot of negativity and a lot of reflection of other people's fear, because sometimes people will say, well, you know, what happens if this, and actually they're telling you their fears. They're telling you their fears if they made a change, and maybe they've been wanting to make a change for years and they're not in that position that they can or could or think about it. And so sometimes people are reflecting their own thoughts on you rather than actually being the support that you need. And so I think I was very cautious about having the conversations and who I wanted to listen to and seeking out that support, so that I had people who were excited about the change. And change, I think, for me has always been something I'm very comfortable with change. Like, I've always been comfortable with change. I kind of like change. I think if I didn't have change, I would actually be more fearful. Like, I've always been someone who liked...
Menards Black Friday sale is here. Get everything you need to bring home the holidays. A Nerf Blaster dog toy blasts tennis balls 75 feet. Fun for you and your pup. Just $15.99. Delicious Dubai chocolate is $12.99 a bag. Color-changing squish lamps and Performax drill bit sets are only $4.99 each. Menards has great Black Friday gifts for everyone in your family. Hurry in while supplies last. Good through November 30th. See Menards.com for details.
To see a change as adventure and is exciting. You know, I kind of believe the world is like that for us to be, explore, to connect with new people, to make those interactions, to try new things. So I think that helped me a lot, that sense of I can be comfortable with a change. I just need to be comfortable with that uncertainty of what it's going to look like. And those two together were enough to kind of ride through any external expectations that maybe were pressing on me at the time.
At any point, did you feel stuck or drained out in your hospital medicine career that you were self-aware, but did it start? And that is what made like, okay, I think that needs to be a shift.
I would say I was probably... I was often at a point where I was taking on a lot. And this is something that I've subsequently learned, which I wish I had more insight to, is that I realized that I was giving a lot of energy. I wasn't very aware of that at the time, that sort of whole kind of energetic balance, my body and the energy that I need to conserve and thinking about ways to bring that energy back after I'd given it. But looking back, I know that I was often in that position where I would give. And that meant that I was drained. That meant that I did feel quite low in energy at times. And that sometimes impacted my physical health. You know, I would pick up a lot of viruses. I would often just really need to sleep for long periods of time. You know, if I had time off, it was like I couldn't do anything. But it also impacted my social interaction as well. There were times where I just didn't want to go out and socialize because I'm inherently not someone who gets energy from other people. I get energy from nature, from my surroundings, from quite quiet things, from calm things. So I, as much as I love the interaction with people, actually my natural state to get energy is by doing a lot of calming and a lot of quiet activities that I really wasn't making any time for those sort of things. So I definitely had moments where I felt really drained. And I think, did I feel stuck? I don't know whether I felt really stuck because I'm not sure I had the energy to feel stuck. That sounds funny, but I think I was so, and this is a lot of people, I think, like you said with your career, is that you feel like you're in this hamster wheel. So you're kind of just going. You're just going. I definitely didn't have time very often to reflect and think, is this actually what I thought it would be? Is this actually taking me down a path where I want to go? How can I make sure that I get that balance in my life? Is it allowing me to have the space in my life for other things? It wasn't much space to reflect. And I think that's quite common when you're in a career or in an environment that doesn't kind of fulfill you, because you can be so busy and you're kind of just going about day to day, but you need somehow to create that space to be able to reflect. And that can be a challenge.
Looking back, what were the biggest challenges you faced to do something what your heart wanted?
A big one, I think, is belief. It's like that self-belief. Like we were talking before we pressed record about podcasting, having that belief that you're doing something for your own reasoning, like you have a deeper meaning to it. You have an impact you want to make in the world. And I think that the challenge for me was being clear about what that was, getting clear on what that was so that I could take that with me. And I think the other really big challenge for me was finding the people that I wanted to be like. And I looked a lot for external role models. And, you know, people have come into my life who have given me that support, that is ideas. And sometimes they've been completely outside my world of medicine. And sometimes they've been within it. But what I think I realized from that challenge, like I was often looking. And what I did was have to start realizing that I could do a lot of looking internally. So actually realizing that the answers were internal instead of looking around for someone to tell me, no, you should do this, 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 and it's going to be amazing. If you take these steps, everything will work out. And I think a lot of us want that. You know, a lot of us want the answers, but actually the answers are inherently inside. And that was a big learning for me. So there was a point where I was kind of searching. And then I started to really do a lot more internal reflection. And that's where I learned a lot of skills around mindfulness and yoga. And that was really what helped me to get that level of reflection into my world.
Can you share how your previous experience helped you in create the career you have now and which aligns with the values to what you do now?
So now I have a career which is very flexible and, you know, I'm able to work coaching other doctors. I'm also able to work as a public health specialist. So I work with contracts and organizations, and most of that is focused on global health. I think for me, my core values that really help me to work on that is kind of that sense of equality, of justice, of fairness. So that really drives what I focus my energy on. And also that sense of wanting to make a positive impact on the world in whatever way I can. And so I think when I look back at all of my skills and all of my experience, I always think everyone's journey is so unique. And we always have these little paths, but everything along the way has contributed to who I am, whether it's the people I've met, the jobs I've done, the work I've done in different places, the contracts I do now. I kind of believe that all of that has made me. And I don't think I would be able to do what I'm doing if I hadn't have had that path. Maybe I would have found a very different way. You know, like it's always fun, isn't it, to look backwards and think, oh, well, if I had done something different, if I hadn't have trained to be a doctor, what would I have done? But I think the better way for me to look at it is like everything I've done has given me the skills to see how I want my life to be, but it's also given me those quite practical skills of communicating with people, of understanding people, of wanting to create things that are going to support people and help people. And I think that those things haven't really changed. Those are the things I always wanted to do. They just have changed the way I do them.
In your own mindfulness journey, what is something which you felt it was a challenge to you to shake off the old one and to learn the new one? Hey listener, thank you for tuning into Discovering Journeys. If you're enjoying this conversation, I would love for you to take a quick moment to follow the podcast on Instagram so you never miss these incredible stories and learnings. Also, please consider sharing it with a friend or leaving a review, as it goes a long way in helping more people discover this podcast. Now, let's get back to the conversation.
So my mindfulness journey really started with yoga and like the asana practice of yoga, the movement practice. And I wasn't really familiar with the broader sense of yoga or the philosophy behind it. And I think for me, I was so used to doing that I did find it really hard at the very beginning to just simply be in something rather than worrying about what the outcome was. Like a yoga practice was more a form of physical movement rather than kind of connection to my body, to my breath. And that was difficult because I think because I'd been in a world where I was programmed in a way, you know, I'd kind of always been in this world, which was a doing world. And so much of our world is like that. We kind of praise people for productivity, for the things that they produce. We tend to not give so much praise for people being still and silent and just being, you know, that's kind of the world we're in. So those were things that took me time to learn as a skill, to really be comfortable with being, but also to realize what it could offer me, like realize that the benefit of that connection in terms of the greater clarity it brought me, the greater sense of confidence with, you know, my intuition and my own guidance and those skills I've been able to pick up from it. So I would say that was definitely a big challenge for me at the beginning.
In this current scenario of how we are leading our lives, work-life balance is a term which is used pretty often and people struggle with it because of the things we have spoken about. It's like doing because you are running behind something, whatever it is. Could be money, fame, or you just don't know what else to do. It could be as simple as that. But in medicine field, what happens is you have another life depending. So you have to adhere to it. So what does work-life balance look like in people who are in medicine field?
Yeah, it can, I agree. Work-life balance is a difficult term because what can be easy to do is to kind of set this sort of idealistic work-life balance where we're going to be able to do 100 things every day and we're going to make most of every 5 minutes. Whereas the way I really like to see work-life balance is more about checking in on that daily basis of finding that balance on that day around your energy. So I talked about me seeing what my energy was like back then and realizing I wasn't doing those activities. And the way I try to bring balance in and the way I like to share it with my clients is really thinking about what is it that you need on a daily basis and how can you create space for yourself? So it might be that you have a day where you are giving energy all day and you might be really enjoying it. It might be that you're busy with your family, you're busy with friends, you've got social things on, you've had a really great day at work, and maybe that's okay. But the recognition is, what do I need to do to make sure that I can keep doing that? What are these things that will help me recalibrate, if you like, my energetic levels, and where am I? And that's also a practice I think can be really helpful, is just in the morning to kind of check in and be like, where's my energy today? Is it really low because I had a hectic day yesterday? If so, what do I need to do today just to carve out some time to refill the energy? And where can I juggle those things around? What are those things that maybe I can delegate to other people? What are those things that I might need to say no to? And that's where I think boundary setting is really, really helpful, because often for people who feel like they are filling up their days, and this happens in medicine, is that you have, you know, long shifts, you might be very, very busy, you might not have breaks in your shifts, and then you may go home to a very, very busy life also with social engagements and family engagements, and then finding time for actually those activities that might also be fulfilling to you is really challenging. So I think a work-life balance can exist in medicine, but I think it's about making those little changes daily rather than having some kind of ideal about what it looks like, is to really check in and think, you know, actually today my energy's low. I need to go to bed just like 10 minutes earlier. I'm going to journal for just 5 minutes, or I'm going to make myself, you know, that amazing cup of hot chocolate that I love because I just need a bit of nourishing. Or, you know, if you're someone who loves to be with other people, then it might be that you need to, you know, put in your diary something that's going to light you up. So you've got something to look forward to. It might be that, like, on Friday night, you're going to go and have a great drink with a friend and, you know, release your kind of anxieties and chat through your week and have that moment to recalibrate. So I think for a lot of people, and I'm sure this is not exclusive to medicine, I think a lot of careers, people can find it's difficult to find that balance. And I think the way to try to do it is to look on that daily basis and connect with your energy.
Your clients are mainly doctors?
Yeah.
You specialize in helping doctors create because you know the pain points. Did it help you to navigate the doctors in this field?
Yeah, so I started to want to share, I suppose what I really wanted to share and what I still love to share is my own journey of finding how mindfulness, how yoga, how meditation supported me in my own journey to be more comfortable with taking my own path in my career, but also how I bring those into my daily life. So that was always my biggest mission. And then it became quite apparent to me that when I started to share those skills, that actually the people that were really asking me, who were curious, were my fellow doctors, were colleagues who they wanted to primarily try to improve their own well-being, think about how they could bring in some of those things into their lives that maybe they knew they were missing, and find that balance, sense of balance again. But also a lot of my clients that I work with want to look at medicine more broadly. They want to be more holistic about the way that they interact with their clients, with their patients, to see medicine more broadly than just treating an illness. And so I work with a lot of doctors who want to make some shifts in their career where they're also bringing in that aspect of kind of holistic, more holistic wellness. And so obviously that really mirrors my own journey. You know, that's kind of the journey I went on. And so I think it does help having your own journey to reflect on, because I can understand those environments that people are in. I can understand those expectations and those fears and that sense of uncertainty and how it impacts you. And yet I'm also able to share the things, the steps I've taken, the space that I've created for myself to reflect. And that's what I love to try and do with my clients, is create that space. Like I said earlier, it's hard to reflect sometimes, and it's hard to find those spaces. And coaching can be a really helpful space if you're unsure about your next steps and you want to take some time, because you've got a safe space where you're having a conversation, but that person is there for you. They're not there with their agenda. They're not bringing their fears. They are solely there to allow you to explore your feelings and your thoughts and your fears and come up with solutions with you to help you find those next steps.
Is there a favorite client story you have to share?
Many of my clients follow a very similar pattern, but I think one of my clients who I loved working with was a client from 2 years ago now. And when she first came to me, she had already taken steps to change her day-to-day at work. She'd already gone part-time, which is something that a lot of people do if they're feeling starting to feel overwhelmed. And what she'd realized was that she'd actually been working in medicine for a similar amount of time to me, so quite a long time in clinical medicine. And she had started to realize she was not enjoying it. She was starting to feel that sense of resentment towards both her colleagues, her patients, not feeling excited to go to work in the morning. And she was allowing the day to really take over her feelings, her emotions. So she was bringing a lot home with her at the end of the day, which was starting to impact her social life and the energy she had outside. And so she knew she wanted to do something different. And she was in that place where she was struggling to feel confident about it, because she had been in the position she was in for so long that she couldn't feel like she could do anything else. And so we worked together for 4 months. And in those sessions, what we were able to do was really go quite deep into some of the fears that she had and unpick why they were there, but also at the same time, allow her to get that sense of confidence about what her skills were and what her expertise were, so that she was able to take some steps. And what she was able to do was actually take steps to train to be an embodied coach, and also at the same time build her business so she could start seeing clients and be able to step into that role comfortably, which was something she was always struggling with. You know, how can you have both roles? Like, how can you have two different identities almost? And by creating that space and giving her that space to think, she was able to really feel much more confident, to the point that she then decided to leave her clinical position and find a different clinical position that could give her some of that excitement, some of that joy back. But also really within that time we worked together, I think one of the things that was really key for her was working out what was really important to her in her life, and knowing that work was an important part. She enjoyed her job and wanted to have that in her world, but she didn't want that at the expense of everything else. And so really identifying that, you know, the other things that were important, like being able to go and visit her daughter, being able to spend those holidays with her friends. And so what she was able to do in that time was really start carving out and creating that life so that she was able to prioritize her own health and wellness and all those feelings of resentment and not feeling fulfilled would just disappeared because she'd actually found things that she could get that joy back from.
Yep. All of us go through like very similar kinds of, but different way. The root cause is all of us want a balance in everything.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, in your coaching so many years, what is the pattern which is so common?
I think those things are probably very common across different sectors, but particularly for doctors. I think the fear is that, and I work with a lot of women who are probably somewhere between like mid-30s to maybe mid-50s. So they're quite far through their career. I think the biggest fear is like, I spent all this time getting here and it hasn't given me the life I wanted. There must be something wrong with me. That's often very common to think that. There must be something wrong with me. I'm not good enough for what I'm doing because it's not giving me the life I want. Rather than thinking, what are the things I actually want in my life and how can I make all these skills and amazing expertise fit into that and find a different way of doing it and do medicine differently so that it makes me feel filled up. So that's a big fear, is that what is wrong that I'm not enjoying my life? I think that the biggest fears, which we talked about, is that, you know, then also that sense of what if it doesn't work out, if I take a different path, I can't earn enough money, I can't live the life I'm accustomed to now, I can't go backwards. Those sense of the uncertainty really kicks in for a lot of people. And they can be huge stumbling blocks to taking action, because if you allow those fears to just repeat themselves, then you're just kind of giving them space. They can get bigger to the point where it's almost paralyzing to actually start to think about anything different and to kind of resign yourself that the only option is to stay in the situation you're in. So I think those are the biggest things, that feeling of fear and feeling stuck, like you haven't got options. And so that's where I really like to help people unpick all of that so that they realize they do have options. They can create their own unique paths. We only have really one opportunity in life to create that path for ourselves, and that path can look different for everyone.
Talking to so many women, you know, what I have realized is I think in the last maybe a decade or two decades, women has put this extra pressure on themselves apart from whatever the pressure we were put. We have add on extra pressure of doing everything, being everything, just being everywhere. You know, we are all scattered around. I mean, what is actually important? What is not actually important? Nobody has the time. Just do. So I feel it has been a more, and especially there is also a sense of pressure of being financially independent. Like if you're not financially independent, you're like, okay, so what are you doing? In the recent years, this is something I hear people saying that, no, I can't take a break because I have studied, I have done this. It's so hard to pull back.
It's really difficult. I think also, particularly if I go back to when I first went to med school, it was like the first year that there was, I think we had almost 70% women in the year, you know, going into the first year at med school, which was so exciting. And people were really proud of it, you know, that for once we'd kind of tipped the balance, that it was the other way rather than being such a male dominated industry or career. And yet I think that does come with a lot of pressure because we want to be able to live up to that expectation, and we have so many opportunities available to us now that, you know, our ancestors didn't have, you know, in quite recent, like family members even wouldn't have had those opportunities to really study, to continue to even get into careers that really previously weren't open and available to women. That I think that comes with a huge amount of excitement, but it also comes with that expectation. And then, like you say, we often want to be everywhere. We want to be able to do all different roles. And it's not that it's not possible, but it's just what it looks like, I think, has to be shifted. And that's where I think we can particularly caregivers, are really terrible at boundary setting because we don't see our needs as important at all. We see the needs of everyone else around us as important. And so we will spend the entire day, the entire week meeting those needs, often at the expense of our own. And so I think a lot of that managing those expectations, and for women particularly, it's about identifying what is it actually that you need? Because even that question sometimes can be really difficult to answer after a period of time. If you're very used to certain roles, what is it that you actually need? What are those activities that you need in your week? It might be communication. It might be actually practical things. It might be things related to your health. But what are those things that are really important to you? And then where can you fit those things into your life? And if you really can't see space, then it's like, what can you get rid of in your life? What are those things that actually, because we all know that we have those things. We all know that we have those tasks that maybe someone else could do.
But that's a hard one to cut off, right? Yeah.
Maybe we have people who, you know, we shouldn't allow so much into our lives, or different ways of doing things that can help us. And so I think it is about kind of that reassessment, but it comes from really, it's a big change to realize that your needs are important. I think that women really struggle sometimes with really firstly acknowledging their needs and then voicing them.
When you said that if you're feeling overwhelmed, then you have to cut down, something happened to me. I'm like, oh my God, cut down. Like, no, I can't. Like, everything is important. That's the first thing, it just popped into my mind when you said you have to cut down. Like, no, I can't. It's that resistance is so real.
And that's a very normal response. I think a lot of women have that response because we have sort of created patterns around us where we're enabling a lot of the time other people. And so it's not uncommon to find that everyone around you is actually, you're allowing them to have a great quality of life. You're giving all your energy to them, but it could be at the expense of your own health.
I think at the beginning, I have struggled many years in setting up a boundary. And once you start setting up a boundary, you feel so guilty and you feel so not true to yourself that when you have to change. And I struggled with it in my mind that, okay, am I being selfish or am I really doing good to me, or is it really called a good boundary? You know, that debate goes so much into your head, and I really, really struggled with it for a very long period of time. It's a curve. Everything is a learning curve, but in this, your guilt and because you have to put boundary to people who are close to you. If it's a stranger, it's easy for me to do it. Even as an empath or a giver, I can do it. It's fine. But you have to say, no, today I won't be able to do this thing for you. Yeah. I think the empath and the givers will understand how hard it is to tell for the first 25 times.
It's not easy. And I don't think it ever becomes easy. So I am someone who has to constantly work on healthy boundary setting. And it's a practice. I always say this. It's a practice. It always is a practice. It's like you're never going to always get it right. But it has to be there to protect you. And one of the things I think can be helpful is the way that we communicate our boundaries. Because like you say, it can be uncomfortable to start actually asserting them. And often it's uncomfortable because we know that the boundary's been stepped over maybe for a period of time. So the other person that you're talking to might be quite shocked or surprised that you're asserting a certain boundary. And I think the way that you can communicate that makes a big difference. So I always think that it's helpful to remember that there's two of you in the boundary setting and there's two of you in that communication. So if you think about it in terms of like actually putting a physical boundary, like if you were going to go and put a fence up outside, you can't just push the fence towards that person without explaining to them what you're doing and why you're doing it. Otherwise, they're just going to be like, hey, hang on, I'm just going to push it back to you. Why would you do that? You know? So I always think that the more we can communicate why we're setting the boundary and what we are asking the other person to do, the easier it becomes, because we're allowing that person to understand your priorities, understand your needs and why they should help you. Whereas if you're just pushing the boundary back, it can feel, like I said, with that, like that physical fence. They're like, why are you doing that? It's in the wrong place. I'm just going to push it back again. Whereas if you can explain, I'm going to set this boundary. I can't do this thing for you today because of X, Y, Z. I need to focus on something for my own health. It's really important because I need to make sure that I get enough sleep, or today I really need to focus on doing this job application, or I need to go to my gym session. I really want to do this for my own health, wellness. What I'm asking of you is, and then ask them what it is you want from them so that you're really clear. And it's a lot easier then for that person. It still might be unusual for that person. It might still be a bit difficult, like you say, the first 25 times, but it gives them the understanding. And by doing so, also you're voicing. You're able to voice your needs. So instead of the guilt coming through, what you want to have coming through is that sense of assertiveness, a sense of empowerment. Of actually, okay, I've stepped into this. I can do this and it's going to help me. And it's also going to help them. And I've just told them how it's going to help them if I have more energy, if I'm able to focus on this now. So I do think that that can help. But it, like you say, it is a practice.
In your own words, what is a well-being?
For me, I think that well-being is about your global sense of being. So it combines that sense of physical being, of emotional being, of your spiritual being. It's like if you have a sense of well-being, everything within that has its place. It's like a ball and it's spinning beautifully. That for me would be well-being, is having all these little pieces falling in together. And maybe those pieces look different over time. You know, I would never like to say it's like an eighth of this and an eighth of that. I think it's more like a jigsaw puzzle that kind of melds together. And when it's all melded together, it's beautiful and spherical. But then maybe those pieces can look different at different times, depending on what's going on in our lives and what we need.
I'm picturing a very shiny globe. Happy, happy smiles.
Yeah, yeah.
And you have your own podcast.
Yes.
Authentic Tea.
I called my podcast Authentic Tea because it's really about being authentic. It's about having that sense of authenticity. But also because I am from the UK, we do love tea. So it was a little bit of a play on words. But yeah, I do love my podcast. I think what I really love about podcasting is conversations. It's always so interesting to have a conversation. You know, for you and I, we actually don't live very far from each other, but it's just that opportunity to connect with someone, to learn, to listen, to have that shared space, which I find really, really, it's great fun.
Yeah, it's the same thing, I think, on my podcast too. I love having conversation, and especially the topics we spoke about today is so relevant to so many and to us as individuals too. So yeah, it just makes you happy, I guess.
Yeah.
Why living low carbon lifestyle so important to you?
Yeah, so that for me has been something that's been a real, definitely a learning curve, definitely an experience, an adventure to try to understand how I could contribute to what's going on in the world, in the sense of thinking about how I live consciously on the planet so that what I'm doing has a minimal negative impact in the sense of climate change. And so it's definitely been a transition. Gradually, step by step, things have changed in terms of energy, food, movement, housing, interaction. You know, it covers so many different aspects. But for me, it's like, if I can't do this, like I constantly like to push myself, like, what is the next thing that I could do that would mean that I would reduce my emissions, reduce my impact in a negative sense, like keep going. Like there has to be more and more that we can do. And I do believe with climate change, obviously it's an enormous issue. Yes, we need governments to change. Yes, we need policies to change. But also there's a huge power in the individual and the collective. I do believe we can find the ways to make impacts ourselves, to make changes ourselves, to influence other people. And that's one thing I love. It's a bit similar, I guess, with my coaching, but one thing I love about our journey here in terms of what we've been able to do. So, you know, we live, we're not fully off grid, but we have very minimal kind of external energy coming in. We are about 90% autonomous with our fruit and veg. You know, I don't travel at the moment at all on any planes. Like I really try to be, but it's about being conscious, I think. And I don't get it right all the time. Like obviously not. But just trying to be really conscious about everything, because I do believe that the actions we take is one of the biggest powers we have. You know, the money we spend, the actions that we take in this world, they have the biggest impact. So we can make changes on that individual level that will have a change on a more community level. And I went off point there a little bit, but what I was going to say was, what is interesting is when you're on a journey is that you can influence other people's journeys too. And you can, by sharing that journey, which I guess is why we love podcasting, because it's about sharing voices and sharing journeys, but it does influence, it can help people to find solutions for themselves.
Yeah, it's quite inspiring.
Yeah. I would encourage, like, I do think, you know, it's one of our biggest, it's the biggest challenge we have in the world, climate change. It's going to impact all of us. It's going to impact some people way more than others. And I think that that can often be the difficult part. There's a lot of us, particularly in a European setting, where we don't see that impact all the time. Whereas we know that in other places around the globe, people really are impacted very heavily. And I do think it's our responsibility as individuals to do something. And I think all of us can do something. It's about finding the things you can do, whatever that looks like in your own setting. And that might be having conversations. It might be doing practical things. It might be sharing with your children about what's going on in the world and, you know, encouraging them to take steps when they're able to. But I think whatever you can do, all those little contributions all add up. And for me, I just think all of us should really be aware of it and be stepping up to that quest, if you like, that challenge. Because if we don't, we all kind of know that the future isn't going to be a positive one. So yeah, I feel like this for me now is the point where there's not really an alternative, but I realize a lot of people don't think like that.
Yes. So it's like, a huge percentage. Yeah. Not a bit.
Yeah.
Okay, Rachel, now we're towards the end of the episode and I'm going to ask you my three questions as I usually do. So here it goes. First one, what surprising lessons have you learned in your professional and in your personal journey?
The most surprising lesson, I think a lesson that I still have to work on is about trust, trusting that things will go the way they're meant to be, like having maybe that greater sense of trust, of just, it's not really surrender, but it's like trust in something more, trust that actually the steps that are going on now have a purpose and it will turn out. And that's something that I often, yeah, I think I'm so programmed to be in that sense of like, we'll do this to achieve this, to have this will happen to this, that sense of trust is something that I have to kind of nurture.
What practical step a person can take if they want to start their mindfulness journey?
I think the best way for mindfulness, and this is partly how mindfulness came into my life, is really connecting to your breath, because it's like a free tool. Like we have it with us all the time. And the breath can really help if you are in states of anxiety or stress, or you're very busy, because connecting to your breath and slowing the breath down and being aware of it gets you into that state where you're in that parasympathetic kind of chilled out state. So if you really just want to bring a little bit of mindfulness, and mindfulness is really about bringing that kind of quality of focus without any kind of judgment. It's just, I would really encourage people to notice your breath. Just, it can be the first thing you do in the morning. Just, what is my breath? Where is my breath? Just like, take a breath in, take a breath out, and just notice it. Try not to judge it. Don't think too much about it, but just connect. And that practice itself can be really, really helpful any time of the day. But if you start doing it on a regular basis, it can really help to start getting that connection with your body and what's going on in your body, because we spend so much time kind of up here in our thinking brains.
What advice would you give for people who feel drained or trapped in their career?
So as we've been talking about boundary setting, I think that is a big part of it, is looking at what's going on, kind of acknowledging what's happening and where maybe those boundaries are being overstepped, acknowledging how you feel about what's going on, and then seeking a space that you can do that reflection. And so that can be finding a great friend or a mentor or a coaching, or finding a group coaching program, whatever it looks like. It might be that you're able to do that yourself with, you know, mindfulness tools, journaling, things like that. But creating that space so that you can unpick why you feel stuck and start thinking about what it is that you want to do for those next steps and how you're going to take those steps forward so that you can feel less stuck and actually create that career that you love and feel fulfilled in.
Thank you so much, Rachel, for touching about so many topics so relevant for in today's time, and sharing your journey of how you created your own meaningful career. So thank you so much for this.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me. It's been a pleasure to have this conversation.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Discovering Journeys. I would love for this podcast to reach as many people as possible. So please remember to subscribe, rate, and leave a positive review. Share this podcast with someone you think who would appreciate this conversation. Check out the show notes for all the links and details. Until next time, keep embracing your journey and discovering new paths.